the Brad Sesmatt Show, broadcasting live.
It's good Monday. Thanks for being with us. Off we go into another week. We will have John Wilner with us today, Wilner Hotline, all things around the Pac-12 conference, as we continue to look into the start of the college football season, which is now just 11, count them, 11 days away before NAU takes on ASU, and 13 days before we get to the San Diego State game against the University of Arizona, all sorts of college football news and notes around the Pac-12 with John Wilner. We will have on today's show Eliav Gubay today. I have to say that correctly, because Eliav has done great work with the Mercury. They wrap up their season, or wrapped it up over the weekend. So we'll have Eliav with us on that and some other things as well. That is all straight ahead on today's show. Opening comments are brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. That is Desert Financial Credit Union. As always, we appreciate their ongoing support. Programming note, tonight on our YouTube channel, and we'll put it out on our social, the Sports 360 AZ YouTube channel, we are premiering another documentary, ALS to Ashes, the Corey Nocta story. ALS to Ashes, the Corey Nocta story. It premieres tonight at 6 p.m. on our YouTube channel. It will be over on the Football AZ show on Valley Sports Arizona starting tomorrow night, and on the website and all platforms as well. It's very well done. I'm not going to give away too much, but it's hard. This is a hard one. If you're looking for peaches, puffy clouds, and ice cream, there are some moments of that in this doc, but the title alone says it, ALS to Ashes. And Corey Nocta's story, Corey is still with us, by the way. I'll just leave it at that. But this put together by Jordan Spurgeon and Brandy Aguilar, both of them busting their tails, the staff behind the scenes working out on it as well, so editors and audio and everybody involved. Our chairman of the board steering this Titanic today is Jared Nielsen. If anything screws up, it's his fault. All right. So the Cardinals-Ravens preseason game. All that I've gotten today is, man, those helmets look great. Love those helmets. Man, those helmets are great. Kyler called plays. So what did we take from the game itself? Why did they play yesterday? To market the helmets, to give the new Fox broadcast A team what it's like to work together in a game in the where the Super Bowl is going to be held, and all that stuff. So it was a dress rehearsal for them. I had some people I was talking to. Goody and I were texting back and forth last night because Bill Goodykins. Because Goody was watching the game from a critique standpoint. Greg Olson is the new number one analyst for Fox, replacing Troy Aikman. Kevin Burkhart is replacing Joe Buck. Aaron Andrews and Tom Rinaldi were still there doing their thing. The halftime show was scaled down a little bit. If you can tell, yeah, I was watching. I don't know why. I was sitting there saying, this is an hour and a half of my life I'm never going to get back. But then the person who I was asleep with, my wife, said, man, those helmets are cool. I don't know. And everybody's got to find their sweet spot. I'm just looking at, do they have the corner? You know, how does James Conner, well, he's not playing. Well, how does AJ, oh, he's not playing. How about Buda Baker, not playing. So Aaron Andrews down there doing the Buda Baker, it's so great you're here, and you're the most feared guy, and does Greg Olson scare you, and da, 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 they're filling time. I have to believe behind the scenes they're just like, man, this paycheck is great, but oh my gosh, what am I doing here? I have to believe that to be true on that front. It is somewhat significant that J.J. Watt has COVID, because it's not like you can just say, oh, he's going to be fine when the season starts. So he's diagnosed yesterday, wasn't at the game, not going to play this week against Tennessee. Preseason is over. The regular season is still, what is it, you know, 20 days away. So he should be fine. That's about the only thing. I'm never going to be one that sit here and sound alarm bells or make too much. You can make too little out of yesterday. You can make too much out of yesterday. Maybe the helmets aren't great, but that's about all I took from it. If you paid to park and you paid to go to the experience, that's your money. It's your decision what to do with it. The quality of this stuff in August is just reprehensible. It's just, God, it's awful. Beyond that, I thought that the Diamondbacks St. Louis series was entertaining, top to bottom entertaining. The Cardinals are very good, and they're this historic brand. If the Diamondbacks could even be half the brand that the Cardinals are, I'd be very happy here. Friday night, Paul Goldschmidt hit one out of the, I think it's landed at Surprise Stadium by now. He hit it so far. And then Albert Pujols, here is an all-time great. He hits two and almost three out on Saturday night. And yesterday was all over the place. So it was entertaining over the weekend. Team's 11 games under 500. They're not going to the postseason. They're playing kids. I'm good with that. Look at their starting lineup and see how many guys are hitting north. How many guys yesterday were hitting north of 270? And I believe it was one. So it's not like they're rolling great lineups out there. Tonight, we have the Mets and Yankees. I will watch. Max Scherzer is pitching. The Mets have been playing great. The Yankees have not been playing great. Looking forward to watching that tonight. You know, Kevin Durant's name has now surfaced around Memphis. And people are like, well, where are the Suns in all this? Look, the way it works is we're in August. It's the offseason. It's the dead of offseason. We're about 6 weeks away from training camp. I can't see Durant being back with Nash or Sean Marks in Brooklyn. I can't see the Suns giving up a King's ransom. Is this simply Brooklyn trying to up the market, get it out there that someone else is interested in him? And should the Suns still be pursuing Kevin Durant? I can make an argument both ways, but I'm right now on the side of the street of no. Not the price tag, and not if he's the guy saying, fire this coach and get rid of this general manager. This organization doesn't need that. The Mercury season wrapped up yesterday. We're going to have Eliav on a little bit later on it. And I feel like in this market, the WNBA matters. Not many markets are as passionate about that sport. And I was the original play-by-play voice of the Mercury. So I'm all in on women's sports. I am all in on it and love doing those games way back in the day. But there are certain markets where the league is not thriving like it should. And here in Phoenix, they went through 31 roster moves this year. That's a lot. And we're going to talk with Eliav about this coming up a little bit later on in the show. Rory McIlroy and Tiger Woods are putting together a series of events. They're going in the events business. I think that's very interesting. They're looking at LIV, saying, you don't want to go over there. Come over here. The details will come out. Maybe, just maybe, there's going to be players saying, well, shoot, I'm taking all this public beating, being over here on the LIV. Rory and Tiger have got it figured out. They had 22 of the top names in a meeting. And when Tiger Woods and Rory McIlroy are standing in front of everybody, along with their agents probably, their representatives, you have to listen. So this is an interesting development to me. It just is. All right, John Wilner, Wilner Hotline, on the other side, all things college football. That is next on a Monday. I'm Brad Sussmat. It is Monday, and that means we get to go deep with John Wilner. Wilner Hotline on Twitter, the Wilner Canzano, Canzano Wilner podcast. You can find that on all your podcasting outlets. And of course, John contributes to sports360az.com. We appreciate it every week, chopping it up with him. All right, partners. So last week, we were wondering what was going to happen with the Big Ten TV deal. The Big Ten TV deal came down. And your initial reaction, John, when you saw not even just the dollar figures, but the scope, the scape of it all, and the dollars?
I think the big thing is that it's different because they have specific TV windows for specific networks, right? Pacific time, you got 9 a.m., that's Fox. Then you got your afternoon game, that's CBS. Then your evening game, late afternoon, is NBC. So you know based on what time of day, if you're a Big Ten fan, no matter where you are in the country, you look at, see what time of day it is, you know exactly what network the big game's on. And so, and that's a little bit different than what we've seen in the past with these TV deals. So I thought that was very creative. And that, to me, that's what stood out the most. You know, that we knew the dollar figure was going to be huge, right? And it is. We knew that they were going to give themselves a contractual option to expand in the future, which they did. We knew ESPN was not going to be a part of it, which it isn't. So that, to me, you know, a lot of the big pieces were already known, but it's really fascinating how they have arranged the triple header on the broadcast networks.
Okay, so let's parse this out. On the Windows side, there will never be a USC or UCLA 9 a.m. home game, we wouldn't think, ever. Would there be a USC or UCLA on the road 9 a.m.? That would be something I'm sure the coaches, Lincoln Riley and Chip Kelly for now, would say, that's not fair. What do you make out of the early time windows? And then it goes the other side, where if it's a 7:30 kick and it's in Los Angeles and it's UCLA against, you know, Rutgers, that's very unfair to Rutgers. So how do you parse out what we're going to see, when we're going to
see? Well, I think that there may be an occasion where the LA schools have to play that noon Eastern kickoff, you know, and if that's the case, they'll be flying on Thursday to adjust a little bit. I don't know if there are going to be specific, you know, maximums in the contracts,
right?
But I would think maybe, you know, once a year, each of those teams is going to have to play at nine. But that 9 a.m. Pacific window, I mean, that is the Ohio State spot, right? I mean, we see Ohio State on at 9 a.m. Pacific a lot. They're a ratings machine for Fox. I think that their big games will be in that spot. As opposed to the night, I don't believe there are going to be any Big Ten conference games kicking off at 7:30 Pacific. I think the only time USC or UCLA are playing home games at night is a non-conference, because right, it doesn't serve the Big Ten any good to have, you know, Penn State at UCLA kicking off at 10:30 Eastern,
right,
when a big chunk of the Big Ten's audience is gone to bed, right? They want to get their games on in front of the most eyeballs possible. There's no reason to start conference games at 10 or 10:30 Eastern. So USC and UCLA, if they are home, a home conference game for those teams, I think will be the late afternoon window here, 4 or 5 o'clock Pacific.
What do you think, or maybe you know already internally in George Kolovkoff's office, was the reaction to this deal?
Well, they were looking for two things at Pac-12 HQ. They wanted the Big Ten to get the biggest number possible in the hopes that a rising tide lifts all boats financially, right? Mm-hmm. And then they wanted ESPN to not be involved. I think that this was a triple for the Pac-12. The one piece that doesn't work real well for the conference is that NBC, CBS, and Fox all have big financial commitments. So you wonder, are any of them going to be interested in Pac-12, a Pac-12 deal? Because the Pac-12 needs somebody to compete with ESPN to drive up the price. If ESPN is the only network seriously bidding on Pac-12 rights, they can set the price.
Right.
If there's competition, then they may have to up the ante a little bit. And I'm not sure where that competition is going to come from. Ideally for the Pac-12, ESPN and, say, CBS would have been left out. You know, so you had two networks going after or available. So we'll see how that unfolds. It was a very good deal for the Pac-12, but not quite ideal.
Okay, ABC, you left them out in this mix with ESPN. You know, the SEC is going to dominate ABC, but you're still going to have windows sitting there, right, John?
Will have windows. Now, yeah, they've got ACC, and they've got Big 12 still. I think it'll be interesting to see if there are any games played on ABC that start at 7 or 7:30 Pacific. In other words, a night game on a over-the-air network. We saw that one time last year with Fox. The Stanford-USC game kicked off at 7:30 p.m. on Fox broadcast.
Mm-hmm.
That hasn't happened before. The latest the broadcast network games have started in the past was 5 o'clock, right? So it's primetime East Coast. So I'll be curious to see if any Pac-12 games are kicking off on primetime out here on the broadcast networks. That's another potential window. I mean, there's a lot of people out. The West Coast and the Pacific and Mountain Time Zones have 75 million people. You get something on primetime on the broadcast network, you're going to get eyeballs. So we'll see if either Fox or ABC try to do that.
John Wilner with us for a couple of minutes. Wilner Hotline on Twitter. Of course, you can hear him on the Canzano Wilner podcast on all your podcast outlets. John's with us every week, and of course, his content is on sports360az.com. Kevin Warren, when this deal was announced, went out and did an interview, sat down with Bryant Gumbel and talked about, quote, "I can foresee paying athletes. We have to be better at this. We have to resolve it." What did you make out of his comments? Do you buy that? And what is the Pac-12 looking at from Kevin Warren's point of view on that one topic, John?
Yeah, well, I don't think he meant that the Big Ten was going to start paying athletes next week.
Right.
But everybody in college sports who's involved or privy to the legalities and the economics understands that the day is coming when the athletes are going to get treated as either full-time employees or pseudo-employees, you know, and the schools are going to have to give them X amount, $10,000, $25,000, $50,000 a year as compensation for services rendered as an employee, in addition to the scholarship, right? Name, image, likeness, that money comes from outside the university, right? That comes from the business sector for promotions. But eventually, the schools are going to have to start paying them some kind of straight salary. Everybody acknowledges that. The Pac-12 is going to have to do it. Big Ten, they're all going to have to do it. And that's part of the reason we're seeing this realignment is because of the thirst for every last cent, so that when that time comes, schools have more money to pay their employees, the players.
So coach comes in to recruit, and this will become part of the narrative eventually. I agree with you. This isn't going to happen overnight, but eventually it will be, here's what your scholarship looks like. And by the way, if you play here for us, we will give you 35,000, whatever the number will be. But that's going to happen to every single athlete that's recruited on a Division I level, John. You believe that'll come?
You know, I don't know if it'll come at the FCS level, you know, Northern Arizona, but certainly it's going to come at the Power Five level. And I think the other key piece of this is, you know, the presidents and chancellors who run the big schools, they're talking about basically taking major college football away from the NCAA.
Correct.
And creating their own rules and making it its own essential organization. And that is one of the paying the players is one of the pieces that's going to happen in that new world where the Power Five is running its own show. What happens to the FCS schools, Division II, maybe even what happens to a group of five like BYU, for instance, or San Diego State? I don't know that they'll play by the same rules, but the big schools are going to be paying their players eventually. And they're probably going to be running their own show. It's going to be a mini NFL, and they're going to set their own rules on recruiting, on economics, on postseason. Whether that comes in 2 years, 5 years, or 10 years, I don't know, but it's going to look a lot different a decade from now.
Yeah, we're like-minded on that. I believe that is going to happen as well, and I'm to the point where I'm looking around saying who would be the commissioner, or who are the commissioner types that you would want to run it. Similar to Goodell with the NFL, he reports to the owners tell him what to do. Who is going to report? Is it one of the current sitting commissioners? Is Greg Sankey ready to move from SEC to overseeing all of this? Very smart guy. Is it Kevin Warren, who's been very active so far? Kolovkov hasn't said much other than you and I were there together with him at Pac-12 Media Day. Does he have a bar that he can't reach, do you believe, with this net deal now in place with the Big Ten and Kevin Warren?
It'll be interesting to see what he can do, right? I mean, he's got to get something that is he's got to thread a needle. He has to come to the Pac-12 presidents and chancellors, the 10 of them, with a contract offer that provides flexibility for Oregon, Washington, Stanford, so that they can go to the Big Ten if they want without a huge penalty. At the same time, that contract has to provide stability for Arizona, Arizona State, Colorado, Utah, which have the option to go to the Big 12 at some point. So how do you throw that needle between flexibility and stability? That's a tough one. But that's basically his bar, I think. And it'll be interesting to see how he crafts a contract. Is he going to try to go 10 years, 12 years with his new contract, or is he going to try to make it a short-term deal, like 5 years? Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know, but that's a big piece of it. Everybody talks about the money. How much money is the Pac-12 going to get from ESPN or whoever? And that's part of it. But the terms, the duration of the deal, the options to get out of the deal, if the Big Ten calls, Those are all important pieces too.
Do you believe Washington, Oregon, and Stanford looked at that deal last week and said, let's get our toes out the door?
Well, they've wanted to get out the door since June 30th. I mean, since the day USC and UCLA left, those schools have been hoping that the Big Ten would call and say, you know what, we want to take you too. And Warren made a comment to Brian Gumbel about, you know, I could see us being at 20. I don't think we're done expanding.
Right.
But that doesn't mean they're going to expand in the next couple months or even the next year or two. I mean, that could mean they're going to expand in 4 or 5 years. It could mean that they're only going to expand if Notre Dame joins, right? We don't know. But it certainly adds a little bit of uncertainty to the Pac-12 situation because you got three schools, maybe even Cal as well, four schools that are hoping for a call from the Big Ten if that conference decides it wants to create a Western division, essentially.
Okay, let me ask you this on this, and I'll move on from it. Do you think Greg Sankey is standing over there, and you and I are not down in SEC country, but what do you think their reaction was to this? Obviously, their TV deal is going to be monstrous because now they know where they need to get to your point earlier. They know the number that's out there. But can you see where the SEC is saying, well, maybe we go after some of those schools? Do they view the Big Ten as a threat, or do you think they have kumbaya and holding hands? I can't imagine that being the case. Maybe you see it differently.
No, I don't think the SEC has plans to expand anytime soon. I think what the SEC is going to do to try to get more money to keep pace with the Big Ten is that they're going to add a ninth conference game. Because if Alabama is playing, if that ninth game is against Florida, and what has been removed is Alabama against Tennessee Tech,
right,
then that's a lot more valuable to ESPN. So the SEC can increase their media rights valuation without expanding. They just go from 8 conference games to 9. And that'll be real interesting, right? They've been criticized for all these years about playing only 8 conference games. I think there's a real good chance they're going to end up at 9, along at the same level as the Pac-12, the Big 12, and the Big 10.
Yeah, that's very disappointing to hear because I love the late November Tennessee Tech game
right.
on their schedule. I just right. love that they just are saying, yeah, you know, we need to rest up. And
yep.
And I get it. It funds Tennessee Tech. I understand that. But it's a joke with a capital J when it gets to that point of the season and that's what they're doing.
It is in some ways. It competitively, it works for them because you'll notice sure. those games are often right before the big rivalry games. Huh. It allows their teams to be fresh for big games in November because it's kind of like a bye week or a scrimmage, uh-huh. right? But they can get away with it because it's the SEC, right? I mean, they're putting teams in the playoff and winning national championships, and they're not getting punished by the playoff selection committee for playing cream puffs in November. If they were getting punished, it would have changed, but they're not.
Mm-hmm. What are you most looking forward to in week one? We talked about some games last week, but you know, we've been on the business side with this conference for most of the off season. And I'm just wondering from just purely Saturday here, or a week from Thursday, actually, when ASU yeah. with NAU, what are you most looking forward to just on the field, John?
So a couple things stand out. One is how is Utah going to do it, Florida, and how is Oregon going to do against Georgia, right? Because those are games that have playoff implications that will help set the narrative for the Pac-12. I'm also looking to see on a, kind of a second tier competitively, how's Arizona going to handle San Diego State this year after losing? You know, what about, you know, there's some other games at that level, Colorado's playing TCU, you know, Oregon State is playing Boise State. So not quite the high profile showdowns, but the second tier games that will also tell us, you know, does the Pac-12 have any depth to it? And then the last piece is the new quarterbacks. At least 7 teams are going to have new quarterbacks. And I think that there's a chance quarterback play is going to be better this year than it was last year. And we'll have a real good idea, you know, week one, where things stand. And, you know, Arizona and Arizona State are 2 of those 7 teams.
Let you go off that. Appreciate your time and your insight as always, John. Have a great week.
Thanks very much, Brad.
There's John Wilner, Wilner Hotline. You can find him over on Twitter at Wilner Hotline. Of course, his content on sports360az.com here on the TV show and the Wilner Canzano Wilner podcast. We're back with more after this timeout. All right, as promised, we're going to go to the putting green of Eliav Gabay. Eliav is getting ready to go putt. And you have to do that because the Mercury season is over. You did a great job on the Mercury, by the way.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Was it fun?
It was fun. It was fun. It was wild. It was unique, you know, definitely the most unique season I've ever witnessed. So it was really an honor to be able to tell the stories and keep the fans involved, you know.
All right. So how would you describe this year? Is it going to have the asterisk because Brittany Griner wasn't here? Can you remove the asterisk and dive down on Vanessa Nygaard and what she had to deal with? There were a lot of things. You and I talked a couple of weeks ago, but now that the season is behind us with them being eliminated, how do you parse this out without having an asterisk next to it?
So let's just talk about it from a basketball perspective, right? Sure. When you're a rookie head coach and you lose Brittany Griner straight up, obviously all WNBA center, second MVP voting last year, that's big, right? That already changed everyone's roles immediately, right off the bat, right? Including Tina Charles, who expected to be alongside BG. Now, you go from that to, again, adjusting. Tina Charles leaves, right? That didn't work. Okay, small ball. There you go. That's working. It felt like, okay, we're getting somewhere here. Okay, Skylar's doing great. Diana's doing great. They're really finding their groove offensively, defensively as a team. The ball movement was crisp. I know you love those pick and rolls, Brad. They were getting those done, popping out to the corners. The threes were dropping. And Diamond the Shield gets hurt, right? You keep moving. Then Skylar Diggins-Smith and Diana Taurasi out for different reasons. DT because of a right quad injury. Skylar for personal reasons. Okay, now what happens? Again, more adjusting. The Shields steps up, averages around 17, 5, and 5. Sophie Cunningham, already when small ball began, she's definitely a most improved candidate because of that small ball change and her moving to the four. Shea Petty, totally leveling up the way that she has been and has continued to impress all year. And then they made the playoffs, Brad. So asterisks are not. Going through what they went through on a basketball perspective specifically, that is impressive. And to me, that's a win.
But you know there's going to be some that will say, well, they didn't have all these players. They shouldn't have even made the playoffs. There's going to be that. In fact, I've already seen that on social, that they're not saying asterisk. I'm kind of looking at it saying, you know what? You can take 2020 in a sports calendar and say COVID year. You can take 2022 in the Mercury year and say a lot of bleep that was out of control, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's where no matter what happens, just them making the playoffs, in my opinion, after all this, earns Vanessa another year for sure. And I'd like to see personally what her system looks like. Listen, we saw a little bit of it, right? We saw it with the small ball, like we already mentioned. But I want to see what it looks like the way it was supposed to be with hopefully Brittany Griner coming back to it. And we'll see about Diana Taurasi. And according to Jim Pittman, even though, you know, the season ended a little bit dramatically, if you will, or with a lot of question marks regarding Skylar Diggins-Smith, she's under contract for next season. He's expecting her to be there.
Eliav Gabay is with us for a few minutes as we talk about the Mercury and their season, which just wrapped up. Eliav was all over it this entire season, did great job. Make sure you give him a follow over on his social media platforms. Okay, Vanessa Nygaard, there was criticism towards her. You just said you'd like to see her back for another season. Is there any question at all that she wants to be back? And the makeup of the rest of the roster. Shea Petty went down with a severe injury. You know, Brittany Griner today is still not here. So can the Mercury sit tight in this, Eliav, or is there a different way for them to go in this offseason?
And I'm glad you brought up Shea Petty because, yes, the last straw in all of it in the playoffs, when they were playing the Aces pretty tight through three quarters, Shea Petty goes down, ruptures her right Achilles tendon. That just adds more to it. And as Sophie Cunningham put it, it was the dagger in the heart because she is the glue of this team. But to answer your question regarding Vanessa Nygaard, I expect her to want to be back. She sounded from the exit interviews like she's very motivated to focus on improving this year. So she's not just taking this as, oh, it's a win. You know, we made the playoffs. Nice. You know, I directly asked her, do you consider the season a success given everything that's gone on? And she went straight to, in Phoenix, the expectation is championships. And she's right. And Jim Pittman echoed that. So there's no question that she wants to be back. And I think she deserves to be back.
About the business side of basketball, you know, were the stands full? Was there the buzz that they want? You know, at some point, I'm the original play-by-play voice of the Mercury. I went through season one where it's the Mighty Mercury in the first couple seasons, and there was a lot of buzz, a lot of excitement. The league has leveled out in certain parts. Did you see the business side do well?
I'll tell you what, going to a Mercury game, and it's not just because we're in Phoenix and all that, going to a Mercury game is one of the most fun experiences in basketball that I've been a part of. When you go to the games, first of all, yes, the crowd is there. The crowd is loud, passionate. The seats are packed. You know, for that Sue Diana last matchup, it was huge. I mean, over 14,000 in there. The in-game entertainment is fantastic. They do a great job keeping the team, even despite everything that went on, the replacement contracts. People like Vonnie, excuse me.
No, you're good. It's Diana saying, don't forget about me, you know?
That's right. That's right. Can't forget Boss about Diana. Saying,
hey, I got to talk about me a little bit. It's fine.
Even with everything that went on and all the players, Jim Pittman signed 31 contracts this season. Even with all that, they still found players that, like Vonnie Turner, like Kayla Davis, who continue to step up for this team and entertain the crowd and give them something to watch. So, yes, I think the business side definitely worked out. I would like to see, as a whole from the WNBA, a bit more merch overall, but that's a different conversation.
No, it's fine. It's the business side. Eliav, let's get into Taurasi. What does your gut tell you today? The easy answer, I think, is, oh, she's back because she's back every year. But where are you at on that today?
Well, you kind of already said it, but I'd be surprised if she doesn't return. However, if she does leave, I can also see her being the type to just go off into the sunset, you know, not do all the hoopla and stuff. But credit to our guy, Jeff Metcalf. He brought up a good point where we saw how important to the game people like Sylvia Fowles and Sue Bird retiring and having their swan song moment was. And I think she also understands how important that is. So I'm expecting her to be back. She's not the biggest fan of the fanfare and, you know, everybody's staring at her center court, those kind of things. But I think she'll be back because she realizes what she means to this game.
Eliav Gabay, make sure you follow his content over on his social media platforms. He has a wing eating contest story up now on the high school platform at Queen Creek. He is wiping barbecue sauce off his hands as we speak. Get back to your putting green. I appreciate your time and insight.
Thanks as always, Brad.
And we're back with more after this timeout.